and on ABC Radio and on your pod, you're with me, Noel Debien, on The Good Life. As we mentioned in our last episode, the Cao-Dai religion, spelled C-A-O-D-A-I, is an indigenous Vietnamese religion. This is part two, and we're examining it on The Good Life because thousands of Australian Vietnamese follow this religious movement. Its members arrived here in significant numbers after South Vietnam fell in 1975, and it's a religion influenced by Taoism, Confucianism and Buddhism, and it has dashes of Catholicism and other world religions in it as well. Dr. Chris Hartney from the University of Sydney has specialised in understanding this unique new religious phenomenon. I asked Chris Hartney what it was about the Cao-Dai system of belief that seems to reflect something essentially Vietnamese. And it's something that seems to link to the other Vietnamese who are Catholics and Buddhists as well.
There is definitely a religious tradition that unites all Vietnamese people, whether they're Catholic or Cao-Daiist, and that is ancestor worship. So many Vietnamese homes will have an ancestor shrine where living members venerate previous generations of their families. Wok Bao, you might say, or a religious way of the nation that's there with all Vietnamese
so
people.
So that does bind them, whether Catholic or Cao-Dai or Protestant,
yes,
or Buddhist.
Yes.
Ancestor worship is something they all seem to hold in common.
It is.
I think, to be fair to the Catholic Vietnamese, they'd probably call it ancestor veneration. There'd be a technical distinction, but the
possibly
phenomenon would look pretty much the same.
Mm.
What role do the dead play for the Cao-Dai?
That's fascinating. Not only if my father died while he's alive, I should venerate and respect him, but once he's dead, his photograph goes on the temple altar for up to 500 days as I mourn him. But I also place his photograph on the home altar and continue to show filial respect towards him. So it's important there. Secondly, if he happened to be a great soul, somebody who'd done something courageous, had fought off opposers to Vietnam, had been a great literary figure, there would be some charisma that radiated out from his name. So as a great soul, there's the possibility that we could maybe look to him in seance as an authority to communicate the will of heaven to us through seance, through automatic writing. I might just pick up a pen and without any known intent in my arm begin writing messages from him. This is another way of communicating with heaven.
You mean when the seances are started again? Because currently they can't officially happen, can they?
Can't officially happen, but I'm saying even outside of the structure of Cao-Daiism, there's abilities to communicate with the other world. And what's most interesting in Cao-Daiism is, as you look at it in the 60s and 70s, a number of those original founders die, but they're not replaced in the hierarchy because it's believed that they're still able to communicate through. How can you replace these people if there is an ongoing influence from the other world? So sadly and frustratingly, in a way, you watch, if you look at the history of Cao-Daiism, as it progresses, particularly from the late 50s onwards, of denuding itself of its own hierarchy.
I know that, for example, the Catholic Vietnamese have a strong regard for the communion of saints, as they'd regard it.
Mm.
Those who've died and are in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there seems to me to be a parallel, at least, if it's not the same thing, at least a parallel with this Cao-Dai idea that Victor Hugo, through seance, is sending us messages, or Sun Yat-sen is sending us messages, or whoever it is we're talking to, that somehow there's a connection between the living and the dead, which is important. Not that Catholics say they get messages, but they do believe there's some sort of connection. There's some parallel there, isn't there? Also in sympathy, I think.
Well, there is not a great distinction between the living and the dead. This has always been the case in East Asia.
Masonic influence in the formation. When I was looking at the Sacred Heart of Jesus statue, the Buddha statues, Victor Hugo, the various things that I saw, above all, just like on the American $1 bill, a triangle with an eye in the middle of it, dead in the centre. Now, this reminded me of Freemasonry and signs I'd seen from Freemasonry. What's this eye thing?
Well, it's an equilateral triangle, which is Pythagorean, and the eye itself, being the left eye of God, the eye is his eye looking out over the community, protecting it.
The all-seeing eye,
yes,
of God.
Yes, indeed, watching as well. But the eye at the apex, as it were, of the altar structure in a Cao-Dai temple makes a Cao-Dai temple look strangely like a Masonic temple,
yeah,
particularly
that's what I thought. Yeah.
Particularly in the French tradition. So it meant, in a protective sense, that French colonial administrators were walking into this temple in the 1920s, 30s and 40s, seeing the corollaries between this new faith and the Masonic tradition, and being reasonably protective of the religion rather than persecuting it.
You mentioned before that a great soul may have been somebody who'd been defending Vietnam, and again, therein lies another, I think, interesting point about this religious movement. It's fiercely nationalistic. Part of what it was doing was to encourage independence in Vietnam. This was very much, in fact, it even raised an army, I believe, after World War II.
Yes.
It formed its own army, didn't it?
Yes. But when we look at seance messages from the late 1930s, they are strongly pro-Japanese. So anti-European, pro-Japanese, which gives you the feeling that members of the hierarchy bought the propaganda that Japan was broadcasting at the time about an East Asian co-prosperity sphere. What we also have during the 10s and 20s are Vietnamese nationalists finding refuge in Japan and being funded by the Japanese as well from time to time. So Japan was seen as the great alternative to French overlordship in Vietnam. So yes, nationalistic, but at the same time strongly East Asian areas. The Japanese come in during World War II. They use Kaodai adepts to help them in their boat building projects in Vietnam. And at night they train a Kaodai army. And then in 1945, the Kaodaiists hope that one of the former princes of the Imperial Vietnamese dynasty will be returned from Japan and a new emperorship will be established. And the Kaodaiists are there armed, waiting on the docks to facilitate this. The sad part of that story is that the British move into Vietnam and occupy it for several months before handing it back to the French. And France is going through a de Gaullist period at that stage. And France then, having kidnapped some of the significant leaders of Kaodaiism at the start of the war, make a deal that those leaders can come back if the army rolls itself over and supports the re-entry of the French. And that's really the end of that part of the story.
Interesting, though, if I can summarise it, though, Kaodai started out with a really Vietnamese nationalistic consciousness within it that had been inherited, though, from the French. They had then moved on with developing French ideas and using Victor Hugo, using these sorts of ideas within their movement. It had gone on from there to when the Japanese invaded, of supporting the Japanese, because that might bring independence for the Vietnamese in their views, or prosperity, opposing the French when they returned after the war. As I understand, Kaodais were not that keen on the French being back there. They still wanted independence, though the army had been disbanded.
Well, in the 1940s, from 46 onwards, the French re-established a sort of, we can say that it's a puppet monarchy now, but under Bao Dai, one of the last emperors of the Nguyen dynasty. And in that state, Kaodaists did very well. Kaodaist adepts were in the imperial ministry and so forth. So up until the rise of the Americans in the mid-60s, really, the Kaodaists did very well from collaborating with this French-supported imperial dynasty in the south.
Okay. How are the rituals themselves conducted?
There's two traditions of worship, and there are now two temples in Sydney dedicated to the worship of two different deities. The Wylie Park Temple is dedicated to the worship of Duk Kao Dai, or Mr. High Tower, that is the pseudonym of heaven. And their worship is carried forth in a hierarchical way. The elders of the temple are up the front, younger members down the back. The temple is divided left and right, with men on the right and women on the left, but it's also divided back and front. And at the back is a preparation altar where offerings are put together, offerings of tea, wine and flowers.
Not unlike Buddhism.
Not unlike Buddhism, but these have metaphorical representations of our mind, our spirit and our body.
And this woman-man thing is also a yin-yang thing, isn't it, as well?
It is. So with all of these powers constructed in the temple space, these offerings are then in a very beautiful ritual procession, where the ritual walkers step, but as they step, they draw the Chinese character for thumb or heartfulness. And they get to the altar. The temple leaders then place these offerings on the main altar to Dukao Dai as a way of saying, we offer all of our mind, all of our body, all of our spirit to you. There's another temple in Sydney which has just opened recently. It's a modest house in Canley Vale, which the Kaodaiists are hoping to turn into a dedicated building. And this is dedicated to the worship of Duk Thap Mao, who is the Buddha mother, or the great mother of
course, there's a male and female principle in God as well.
Definitely. And at this temple, there is no hierarchy. You have no status before your mother except that of a son or a daughter. And so temple worship there is quite different. You stand where you like, and prayers and hymns are chanted to the great mother of us all.
As I understand it, because Tainin, the centre, is still very much under control or under observation from the communists, it's not free really to do what it wants to do, mm-hmm. that the priesthood and the office bearers within the temple at Wylie Park have not been confirmed, as I understand it. Is that still the case?
No. Everybody who is holding a position is doing it voluntarily. And, of course, there's a great deal of excitement constantly throughout Vietnamese communities around the world whenever there are signs of change back home. But of course, if there is indeed change back home and the Tainin hierarchy is allowed to reconfigure itself in the traditional way that it is supposed to operate, communities around the world might find the directives and the administrative checks and balances from Tainin rather oppressive. But it's something that's also deeply desired. But all of the communities, Kaodai communities around the world, operate in the hope that they're doing the right thing.
Now, that being said, it's complicated in its development, it's broad in its sweep of religious traditions, it's elaborate in its ritual, mm-hmm. It's nationalistic, I think it's fair enough to say, it's very Vietnamese. How are the younger generation going in Australia? Those who are born here, first and second generation, are they sticking with it?
Well, I notice from young Kaodaiists that they are loath to tell people that they are Kaodaiists simply because of the very extensive explanations that would have to come after that. So a lot of young people I've spoken to, if they're asked about their religious traditions, will just mumble that they're Buddhist. I do find that a lot of young Vietnamese will stick with the religion, or Vietnamese Australians will stick with the religion, except in issues of exogamy, when they're marrying out of the community. So if they marry out to a Vietnamese Australian Buddhist, for example, there's no problem with them staying Kaodaiist. If, however, they marry into the Catholic community, which is the predominant religious tradition among Vietnamese Australians at the moment, then there's an expectation that they will just simply be Catholic.
Straighten things out and become Catholic, as it were. I can hear the words
yes.
being said.
Catholics are welcomed into the temple. Anybody is welcomed into the temple, even sad old atheists like myself. of course, Kaodaiists are not so eagerly welcomed into the Catholic Church.
Now, they've excited you, clearly, the Kaodaiists. They've excited you enough to spend a large slice of your life studying them and doing your doctoral work on them. Is there a temperament about them? I mean, I could say to you that if I had to, I could at a stretch tell you a bit what an Anglican is like. I could tell you a bit what a Catholic is like. I could tell you a bit what a Hindu is like. Is there something that a Kaodai is like?
Well, in that they embody something very special about the Vietnamese people themselves. And that is that Vietnam is defined to an extent by its fight for independence against the Chinese. And in order to do that, they tried to make themselves more Chinese than the Chinese. Mm. And you see, during the time when Indochina was part of the French Empire, the Vietnamese reached out and had a love and an excitement of French culture that maybe no other group of people that the French had conquered had. Similarly, they come to Australia and there's an excitement about what it means to be an Australian, but as a way of redefining what it means to be Vietnamese as well. And that kind of curiosity, fascination, openness and welcome nature to new ideas is certainly something that's very much a part of what it means to be Kaodai. It's a religion that is in no way exclusive in the way that it's established boundaries around
tolerant.
Its community and its curiosity. So there's this constant excitement by religious ideas of other people and of ways of seeing things that other people might have.
I've seen lots of footage of Western visitors in Tay Nin watching ceremonies, lots of them. Are there any converts to it coming from the West?
There are in America. And interestingly, in America, some of those converts, whitey Americans, have come from Mormonism. Mormonism, of course, has a sense of prophethood.
Of course it does. Yeah.
It has a sense of messages being delivered to leaders of Mormon communities. It's not a large number, but there are some white Americans who have joined the movement.
Dr. Chris Hartney, thank you for being part of The Good Life.
Yeah, thank you for having me.